thrilled to have Pat here with us today. She's a partner with nonprofit practice leader with experience on demand in St. Louis. And I went to a seminar, just kind of a breakfast and whatever, and she did an outstanding job there, and I'm like, I need to get her. So then we met for about an hour. We spent about 15 minutes talking about this and about 45 minutes with my own personal fundraising stuff. I'm like, wow, that's great. So it's good. So I'm excited about her being here and being here all day with us, and she'll have a lot of great things to teach us a little more for doing the work that we do.
Yeah, Matt.
Thank you. So I am pleased to be here, and I do feel like we're going to learn together. Is that fair? Because I know that folks sitting in the room certainly have an interest in fundraising. You've had varieties of experiences to share. And I want to make sure that we get to everybody's questions and cover the materials, okay? And I had not heard of the Christian Network. This network 127 prior to Steve calling me. And so I've done, you know, some background research and read about you and read about previous conferences that you've had, and you truly do inspired work. So I applaud you for that. So, and I also think it's a lot of fun to do these kinds of things. I'm going to go ahead and get, and Steve gave me all these tricks. All right. So, I would be remiss, since I'm a St. Louis person, not to say welcome to St. Louis. And, you know, everybody is proud of their hometown. So this is just a little trivia. And you have the full set of slides in front of you. So you can take notes on them. You can read ahead if you're one of those read-ahead people. But I ask that you kind of conform today and just hang in there with us, or else you're going to be asking a question five slides ahead. And I'll say, we're going to get to that, okay? But so a little bit about St. Louis. These things were introduced, you know, the Meet Me in St. Louis. Louis, that's been at the Muni Opera numerous times. If you ever get to go to the Muni Opera at some repeat visit to St. Louis, it's a wonderful theater. But Cotton Candy, the Club Sandwich, who would have thunk? I learned new things. I knew some things had been introduced during the 1904 World's Fair, but I didn't know about the Club Sandwich. Ice cream cones, not ice cream, but the cone. Aren't we glad? You see they're all food related. iced tea, who would have thunk? But St. Louis is very warm. So it is a warm town. Peanut butter, I didn't know this. The hamburger, who would have thunk? I did not know this. And yellow mustard, French's mustard, and the hot dog, all introduced during the World's Fair. Now the arch was not introduced during the World's Fair, but that's kind of a St. Louis symbol. All right. So what are our objectives this morning? It's to provide insight, and we've got a lot of material to cover. So we're going to go through some donor trends, because I think it's helpful to see how you fit into the larger scheme of fundraising in the world. We're going to engage participants in current best practices around donor cultivation. And we're going to also talk about the successful team roles in development, whether you're the executive director, whether you're the development director, or whether you're a board member. And just for logistics purposes, this is a two-session session. So we're going to run from 9:45 to 10:45, take a quick 15-minute break, come back, and go until noon. So that is this entire session. And then I'm back in here again in the afternoon for the special event tune-up, if you do those. Okay, so who's in the audience? What are your roles? I just need to know. I went around and introduced, but I don't know what your roles are. What's your philanthropic budget size? That may be, you might be part of a bajillion-dollar agency, but philanthropy may be X dollars. And what part of that total budget? How many years have you been involved in fundraising? And how many people are on your fundraising development team? Just gives me a sense of the audience. And when I asked these questions of Steve, he said, I don't know who's coming. And I said, okay, then we'll ask. So, just first off, you.
I think I'm Stephanie Stewart. I'm with Hope Harbor, and I'm the marketing director. This is my, I was a houseparent for 5 years, so, but I worked in marketing before I became a houseparent. So this is my first year as marketing director. director. And I think our fundraising team is I and Debbie.
Okay. So, small and mighty.
Yes. So we need to learn all we can learn first because we're not.
And what's your budget size? Your fundraising. How many dollars do you raise through philanthropy?
Well, most of it, all of it. So 1.3 million.
Okay.
So a year.
So two people raise $3 million.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Anybody else in that $3 million range? Okay, all right. In terms of dollars raised, yeah. Anybody at that $1 million range or lower? Okay, and in that $500,000 range? Up a little bit. Okay, so we're hitting the sweet spot. Not a million, not 500. Okay.
We're 1.5.
Okay, 1.5. Anybody over 3? Okay, so 3 is our max, and 750, 600 is the low end. Not that low is bad, okay? It just helps me. How many years have we been in philanthropy? 2+, raise hands. 3+, 4+, 5+, 10+, 15+, 20+. 30 plus. Okay. So we've got that full range also. So you're in good hands with a variety of different levels of experience. Okay. So what's the one question? And you only get one. What's the one question you want to make sure is answered in this session? And we're going to try to get to them.
How to get more donors, or younger donors, because our older donors are
okay, younger donors. Next question. Let's go quickly. Next question.
Individuals versus church donations for us. Which one should we be focusing on more?
Individuals, church. And the church in today's session, we can refer to as an organization. Is that okay? Next question.
We are reaching out more to businesses in our community, and I know you put organization.
No, but that's corporate.
Yeah.
And so what's your question?
Well, we are trying to figure out, do you go for them for a project, a certain project? I mean, we have Amazon down the street from us, one of the big Amazon, it's huge.
And one of the least philanthropic national corporations. Isn't that encouraging? Boy, she's just full of joy, isn't she? Okay. Okay, corporations, how and what?
How to maintain and get increases from existing.
Okay, upgrade. We're going to start using some language that we use in philanthropy. So upgrade donors.
We're going to talk a little bit about capital campaigns.
Nope, we're not talking about capital campaigns today. Nope. And so that's why I wanted to get those questions out. Okay? And we can't do everything. I mean, we're going from, 6 months to 30 years, and we can't do everything. So I just want to be clear about that.
Maybe fundraising methods as far as, letters versus online.
Okay.
Peer-to-peer.
Methodology. Okay, yes.
So I'm executive director.
Uh-huh.
I'm retiring at the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
So what should I do?
Yeah. So we've got a short timer in the house. Okay, a short timer in the house. That's okay. I've been a short timer twice, so it's okay. Retired twice. Okay. So, as the CEO. So, alrighty. This is good. We're going to cover some of this at greater levels of depth. But I think that, we will not cover capital campaigns. So I thank you for your grace on that, but we're going to cover a lot of other things. All right. So we're going to do a lot of charitable trends. It's really important, I think, to know the data. And there's no papers in the back two rows. There are at these front rows, okay? And welcome to our group. So giving increased only 1.5% over 2017. That was distressing for us that are in the philanthropic world. I don't know how you individually did, but between 18 and 16, it increased 9%. So there was a lot of confusion in the philanthropic world with the new tax laws that went into effect. And we all were afraid that it would affect fundraising. And guess what? It did. Okay? And it did in a variety of ways. And we're going to go through that. So large organizations, and those are those with budgets of 10 million plus, just so that you know the strata of the language. So 10 million plus grew 2.3 last year, 2.3%. Medium organizations grew, and that's 1 to 10 million. Isn't that a big range? It was in my world. It was like, oh, that's a big range. Grew 2%, small nonprofits grew 2.3%. Online giving, somebody said, okay, letters, face-to-face, peer-to-peer, online. Online grew 1.2%, and overall, 17% since 2016. If you do not have an online presence, you need one. Okay? Faith communities online grew 9.6%. You are faith communities. If you do not have an online presence, you need one. Yes.
You said online giving grew 1.2%.
Overall. For just online giving. People choosing to give their donation through an online vehicle. From 17 to 18.
Okay, gotcha.
And 17% since 2016. Okay? Last year was an anomaly, so I'm glad that the data that Blackbaud provided went back to, you know, some history. Okay? 24% of online transactions were made on a mobile device. I have never made a donation on my phone. But 24% of people are doing it. So let's get with the program. The average online donation is $147. Change over prior year. And this is percentage of your fundraising budgets or national fundraising budgets that were achieved. Large organizations only grew 0.5%. So if you think, oh, the big guys all have all the resources and all the bells and whistles, and they always grow all the time, whoa, that didn't look like that. And 4% of their total fundraising came from online. Medium organizations grew 3.7%, and small organizations grew 0.07%. So everyone had what I would call a challenging year. December still remains the largest giving month of the year. 17% of all giving is transacted in the month of December. So make sure your strategies are aligned so something happens. Faith communities increased by 0.3% and 2.9% online giving. The impact of the tax code changes. So we all know about donor advised funds. Many tax advisors were telling their donors, or their clients, we call them donors, they call them clients, that maybe you want to double up next year and not do it this year so you get the tax advantage deduction. And others, and there was also a drop in smaller gifts, and we'll get to that. So here's some other trends to be paying attention to. So you want to mind your Gen Z. Had never heard that term. But we're all learning. See, it's okay. Mind your Gen Z or your iGeners. These are people born after 1966. That makes them 23 years old. When I was 23 years old, I will tell you, I had my first apartment, I was paying off student loans, and I had a car payment, and I don't think I was very philanthropic, even though I worked in the nonprofit sector. But they're saying, let's mine these people, and that's because of their future. They make up 25% of the U.S. population by 2020 and 40% of the consumers. Consumers are people that have access to money, whether it's their own or others. They understand the impact in the decade to come. Their top causes are youth, Animals and human services. You guys certainly fall into youth and human services. You might think you fall into animals some days. They are also passionate about volunteering and willing to volunteer. Therefore, be authentic. Each of these slides going forward, there's some direction. So be authentic. They quickly sniff out if an organization is being truthful. Okay? Be concise. Be concise. Don't ramble on and on and on and on like fundraising language sometimes does. Tell your story short, sweet, impactful. Grab their attention and mobile, mobile, mobile. The next trend to pay attention to. Shift from generalization to hyper-personalization. So generalization is, we're a good agency, we do good stuff. I mean, I'm being broad, but I mean, and I'm just off the top. Hyper-personalization means Susie's life was changed because we did blank. Okay? No broad platforms, no generalities, no platitudes. You want to segment your messages so that you're allowed to build relationships. Multiple segmentation. Only 45% of organizations do it right. Okay, that's just a number. I don't think it's a judgment. Multicultural audiences will support charities, yet they are not contacted with high-level frequency. So we're missing an opportunity. Contact them more frequently, and of course, use segmented messages. Therefore, make your ask personal, not a generic $50 ask. Pay attention to your online giving page. So many of them are so bad, and so boring, and so flat. If you do a good job of saying, Susie's life was changed because we did, carry that all the way over to your online giving page. Even though that online giving page is to accept donations, make it visual. Continue your impact. Specialize your message for generational and demographic data. Your jobs are hard. Yes?
Do you have any, and we might get to this later, do you have any good, like, resources or suggestions, good examples of this?
Okay, hold that question, and we'll see if we can get to that. I don't have pockets in my pants, so I don't have all the rabbits I can pull out. Okay. Email is not dead. An email means things like e-blast, constant contact, chimp mail, those kinds of things. Email has a median ROI, return on investment, of 122% compared to social media, direct mail, and a paid search. Now, there's some science in this, and we're not going to drill down into the science of all of this because we are doing a lot of topic today. In 2012, 6% of donors were willing to donate through email. In 2018, 28%. So our habits are changing. When I said I've never made a donation on my phone, that doesn't mean I never will. It just means I haven't caught on to that 24% yet, but I might. I don't feel a great need to do that, but I might. But between 12 and 18, there was a big shift in consumer behavior. Be aware of these things. It influences your strategies. Therefore, look more visual. Younger people starting to emerge with a backlash against social media. They're feeling abused online, on Facebook, on Instagram. Email feels more trusted. Now, whether it is or not is a totally different question. Email must be top-notch. Emails need to have a call to action, a compelling message. And a compelling message line. Not fundraising appeal number 747. That would be bad. Okay? All right? Don't overload the visuals. So it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. It's okay to have white space. It's okay to capture one perfect picture. Not 12. Not like my second slide that had all that stuff about St. Louis. That would be bad. Use storytelling to convey impact and outcomes. Do not think in literal terms. You're telling a story. Storytelling is not always literal. All right, the question about growth, corporate giving. All right. 58% of Americans consider a company's social and environmental commitments when deciding where to work. So when people are interviewing for jobs, they say, and what do we do in the community? How do we demonstrate citizenship? Okay? Yeah, the tax code changes created increased giving practices for some businesses, not all. We only have 1 year of data on this new tax code, so we can't project total change. But some businesses said, therefore, we made more money, we will share more money. Some. Therefore, encourage and accept matching gift opportunities. How many of y'all do that? Okay, it's easy money. It's automatic, it's money that you're leaving on the table if you do not talk about matching gift opportunities in every giving solicitation you do. Corporate sponsorships and partnerships. Certainly. There's multiple pots of money within corporations, whether that's marketing dollars they have, whether those are donor dollars, whether their own foundation. So you have to match your ask to the bucket that you're going after. And volunteering opportunities for employees sometimes connect the dots to future donations. Not always, but if you've got a camp, if you've got an event, if you've got something, get their employees involved. They are more likely to give to you if they're involved, if their employees volunteer with you. Recurring giving is the way to go. Do y'all know what recurring giving is? I hope so. You're church people. Okay? You ask multiple times a year for donations and you don't think anything about it. You think it's okay. All right? Recurring giving. Who else are good at recurring giving in your communities? Your museums. The botanical gardens. Public television. Public radio. United Way. Exactly. Recurring giving. It's painless. I made my pledge to public television. Our public radio. It just goes boom, boom, boom. $5 a year, I mean 10 bucks a month, equates to $120 overnight. Did not even see it leave my checking account. $20, $240. You can mount up pretty quickly. All right? Do you have recurring giving? How many of you have that set up? Good. All right. Therefore, invest in efficient online donation systems. We have to make it easy for people to give. Promote your recurring giving. Do you promote it? Do you talk about it? In your solicitations. In your thank you notes. Do you drop that hint? Engage with your donors through regular communication updates and reinforce updates through social media updates. New wing built onto XYZ camp. New service provided. X number of adoptions provided. That's the kind of stuff you do through social media. Okay. Well, that's a good question because when I think of social media, that's background noise. That's not foreground. That's background, and it's reinforcing your key messages that are out here. So some people say once a day. I would say no more than once a day, unless you've got big news. I mean, truly. But whether it's once a day, once every other day, three times a week, it's your decision. But if your social media doesn't change, they think you fell asleep. The community thinks you fell asleep. And it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to, I mean, you know, you can tie into and piggyback on what's going on in your community, what season of the year it is, all of those things. Okay, it's all about communities. When I went around and asked you what city you were from, you all told me what agency you were from, and then I said, and where is that? Because I will remember the city for today. I will try. I can't even promise that. But, all right? So we're all about a community. We're involved. We're in a variety of communities. We're in our church community. We're in our ladies community. We're in our men's community. We're in my yoga community. We're in my networking community. We're in my professional, all right? Communities, likeness. Community-led equals community-driven development. And what that means is we actually like to hang. Even if we're an introvert, we still like to hang. We like to associate or have affinity with. So there's a whole collateral information around this, and it can be the peer-to-peer fundraising. Do you remember the ALS Bucket Challenge? How many of you participated in that? Yeah, bunches of us, okay? And even if you didn't participate, you were kind of like, wow, this is cool. It's cool that this is happening for an organization that really isn't that huge and has a devastating impact on people's lives, okay? But that was all peer-to-peer fundraising for an organization that doesn't do a lot of peer-to-peer fundraising, okay? I thought it was a miracle that it happened. But you also have things like crowdfunding, bikes, walks. But in the demographics, it's also those women's giving circles. Women are the number one growing group of individuals making philanthropic donations. They have access to wealth, they have access to your wealth, and they have access to their own wealth. And they want to give. Young professionals and friends. They don't yet have as much money, but they want to be involved. Remember, it's their need to be involved. Therefore, attempt peer-to-peer fundraising. But that can also be things like, for my birthday this year, I'm asking for donations for. Or if you have a barbecue this summer, I'm asking, instead of bringing potluck, I'm providing. Just bring a donation. Or we're doing a can drive at the barbecue. Bring food for the food pantry. Those are all peer-to-peer. So it doesn't have to be, you know, and I come from an orientation and an organization that we did huge peer-to-peer events. You know, 3-day, 3,000 people moving them across lots of territory. Raising lots of money, lots of risk, lots of porta-potties. Okay. But it must be easy for the participants. Now, when I say talk about that, the national data is that peer-to-peer fundraising is flat. So you're saying, why are you asking me to do that? Well, because I can still have a birthday every year and I can invite you to participate. That's not a bike-a-thon or a bike tour or a walk or a challenge walk or a mountain climb or the run up the Empire State Building or, you know, those are peer-to-peer fundraising as well. One of the examples offered was, if you're a big basketball fan, during March Madness, make donations for every 3-point shot. You know, now I would have a hard time doing that because I'm just not a basketball geek, but it's kind of a fun idea. Go the Extra Mile offers, even for those folks that are involved in those kinds of things, still offer them tours of your programs. If you don't engage with them in real and meaningful ways, they will go away. And create a strong brand to encourage affinity. And at first, they may come to you because they like the event. Do not feel like you have to convert them in their first season. It will come, but be intentional about it. Or else they will lose you and they will go to somebody else that's doing a bike. Artificial intelligence is rising. Now, I know there's controversy around artificial intelligence. I'm going to talk about what I think is technology enhancements. Okay? AI is seen as a collaborator with coworkers. I know that car manufacturing companies and other companies are replacing employees with robots, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making it more customer friendly. AI programs, therefore, consider chat boxes. I was recently, I live not far from here, actually, and I was contacting my little municipality's library, the public library, because I was looking for a book that was not in their system, but they do that interlibrary switch. And a chat box came up, and the chat box was named Brittany. And I thought, oh, how handy. Because I called and I got a voicemail and that was not really very helpful. So I was still trying to figure this out. That is artificial intelligence. That chat box down in the right margin that said, let me help you. What are you looking for? It kept me on that website. It kept me engaged. It made me feel like, oh, thank you. I really do want to do this and I don't want to really have to stop by the library to talk to a human because my life is busy today. Okay? So when you're thinking about that yourself, is a chat box something you want to factor into your technology or something like that? Now, Brittany, the chat box, actually made an error. I still had to go to the library. And when I said to the reference librarian, she goes, that's not right. We can do that, blah, blah, blah. And so, yes, but my point is, if done properly, it can be a tool. Don't be afraid of it. Just explore it. People want and demand high levels of customer service, even from nonprofits. Now, they don't know that you're rubber banding everything together and super gluing everything else, you know, but they expect you to compete in the technology world we live in. This one is very, very important. And I want to preface it by saying, give people the benefit of the doubt. Assume that they are intelligent. Okay? And what I mean by that is, you don't throw a lot of data and numbers at them necessarily, but your impact about transparency matters a lot. Donors want to know where your donations are going. Your donation saved Susie's life. How? Whatever we did with Susie, our rehab with Susie, cost blank. Be that transparent. People think that nonprofits just have minions of squirrels and rabbits and volunteers and helpers just falling out of the trees doing everything for free. There is myths of and false perception. It takes money. Rehab isn't easy. Saving lives is expensive. Do not be afraid of saying that. You do not have bottomless pits. Be transparent about need and resource allocation. Is that scary? A little bit? Have you ever tried it? Your donors run their own house. They know it costs money to do things. And they don't have money trees in their backyard either. I know for many, many people, talking about money is a bugaboo. It's real. So, Donor diligence is often completed by the donor themselves. I'm a donor. You're all donors probably, right? I go online before I make a donation. I want to see that 990. I want to see that audit. I want to see, or the annual report. I want to see your impact reports. What impact did you create in your community? How many lives did you change? If I don't find those things, I won't give to you. Period. End of story. People expect to be able to find that. And I should not have to dig under tab 95 on page 44 of the website. It should be easy. It's usually a drop down that says reports. Put it up there. You should be proud of your financials. It's not a bad thing. It is being authentic to your donors, to your community. It is also a standard of Wise Giving Alliance through the Better Business Bureau that your reports are made public. Y'all doing that? So it's an opportunity. Okay?
I think that people have the perception that if you put your reports out there and how much money that you've raised or spent, that you have enough money.
No, because your impact statements are, we save lives. And this is how much it costs to save lives.
Any advice on how to deal with like a executive director who's not super thrilled about
kind of stuff? You know what? And I get it. And I was an executive director and I was a CEO and my salary was out there and it was in the St. Louis Business Journal and it was out there. It was a reasonable salary for the level of expectation that I had to perform. I was not making Lord Got Rocks. Was I well compensated? Yes. Did we achieve great things? Yes. I am not Mother Teresa.
It is a different, and you know this, I mean, preach in the choir.
Right.
So often in ministry, which most of us call ourselves, there's a perception that we need to be poor and our employees need to be poor.
And when people say, and who buys your roof?
You know,
and I think when we say we are professionals, that doesn't mean that we're making $1 million for this job. No. Are we compensated fairly? Does your 990 say that you do a review of compensation practices before compensation is set? That the board is doing their fiduciary responsibility? Amen. Yes. If we don't claim it and change the perception, the community thinks that, you know, Santa Claus pays your rent.
Is this most important for as we, like, grow our own?
It's important for everything.
Okay. Well, it's
major clear. Donors will ask, and they will be bothered that they had to ask and not find it on their own.
Right. All the reason I'm asking is because, like, for our organization, I'm new to this part. I'm learning. But for the past 3 years, we've had record donations, and we don't do any of that. But I see that as a problem.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, well, why is
You're lucky. Problem? You'll get caught. Some little alligator will bite you in the tush. And then you'll go, oh, that lady told me that alligator would bite me in the tush, and I just got bit. Yeah. So do you want to be proactive about it?
Yes.
Okay. These are best practices. They're doable. Everybody's afraid the first time they do it. And then it's like, how many phone calls did you get? Did you lose any donations over it? What was the fallout? Were you more transparent? Amen. Donors are smart. Yes.
I think there's a misperception that the data's not already out there.
Exactly. I can go on Wise Giving and I can find all these 990s. Don't make me work that hard. I don't like you when you make me work that hard. Does that make sense?
How do most people put that out there? Is it on their website?
On their website, under reports. Oftentimes it's under the About Us, and it's a report tab. And not just 1 year. I look at multiple years. I want to see what your giving trends are. I want to see your history. I'm an informed donor. Yes?
We've been putting our 990s in audits on our website for 10 years. Never got a single call from anybody complaining about how we spent our money or what we paid our people or whatever. I mean, donors that are aware
and yes.
Are not
Correct. Correct. Therefore, mapping your activities to your programmatic outcomes. You have to talk about your outcomes. Those are what I call the impact reports.
How many years would you say is a good number to keep up?
You know what? I see all over the place. I would say don't do more than 10. Don't do less than 5.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And once you're over 10, it's like, okay. And in the beginning, there was a building. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, come on. Stop. Create restricted giving opportunities for specific programs. Now, this makes you all crazy because you want unrestricted general operating funds to do with as you need to. But that's not donor-centric. I don't care about camp. I care about that adoption program. That's what triggers my button. Let me give to that. Now, generally, it's a wash. And if I become a mega donor, which probably I will never do in my life, but if I become a mega donor, then you can say to me, you're going to tip the scale, and this is going to put the agency at risk. I'm a smart person. Talk to me. Okay, so I want 10% going in over here. Do you understand? And those are conversations you want to have anyway. But you want to create those restricted giving opportunities. Use infographics. Dumb it down. That doesn't mean we don't think people are smart. Just means a visual helps me understand. Always simplifying complex data without jargon. Every industry has jargon. We are riddled with it. Riddled with it. And I even said, learn it. So when Steve said maintain and get donors to give more, and I said upgrade donors, learn the jargon, okay, because it's shorthand. But when we're talking to humans, we're not humans when we're doing our work. When we're talking to humans, we don't talk about jargon. We have to be very, very careful and have a human edit our language, okay? Okay, so you're all going to go post your reports online. Even if you have to have conversations that are a little challenging and difficult, I would refer you to the Wise Giving Council practices. The BBWE won't accredit you if you don't put your information out there online. And donors call the Better Business Bureau or look online to see what your report was. Okay? It's just something you gotta do. Plan giving is not just for the super wealthy or for the large nonprofits. $9 trillion. I really don't know how many zeros that is. I know I could have figured it out, but I said 9 trillion is a big number. I don't know 9 trillion of anything will be inherited over the next decade. Not by me. My parents are in heaven and, you know, that's where they belong. There was not $9 trillion disseminated to their 9 children. If only 5% was donated to charity, that would be $500 billion. That's a lot of money. Only 17% of donors that are opened to plan giving as a giving opportunity have been invited by their favorite charity to make a planned gift. That's called leaving money on the table. Planned gifts breed other future planned gifts. But you have to promote it and talk about it in your newsletters, in your online presence, your social media, in your giving solicitations. You also have to be smart and work inside. I'll tell you the story about a grain elevator operator that left my former agency $89,000. Is $89,000 an impressive gift?
Yeah.
It is to me. Oh my battery is running low. Which battery?
Your battery.
Or is it this battery?
Maybe it's this one.
You might want to plug in your PC. It is plugged in.
Okay, it's there.
And it's down here.
Switch on.
Oh.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. All right, grain elevator operator. I got a phone call from an attorney I didn't know, said this gentleman was leaving us $89,000. I didn't even know who he was. It was a great day in my life when we get that call. I immediately go online and look in our database. The gentleman had given us $20 for 19 years in a row. Then there was a big gap of time with no donations. Now, that could be that we converted numerous times in our database. So it was some database error. We'll accept that. Or that gentleman actually went into a nursing home. Life changed for him. He knew he had made his intention. Did not tell me about this. But he had given me $20 for 19 years in a row. So I'm talking to this lawyer. I go, well, tell me about this person. You know, because even if they're dead and I can't acknowledge them, I still want to know the story. Everything we do is a story, okay? And he said, well, this gentleman worked as a grain elevator operator at blank, blank, blank for blah, blah, blah. So he made this intention then. That person had been giving $20 for 19 years in a row. Did we thank him? Yeah, we, you know, probably the generic, you know, thank you. But my point is, it was because, one, he came up in that generation that thought giving was important and consistent giving was important, and it didn't even matter if it was $20 or $200. It was just consistent. And $20 was a lot of money to a grain elevator operator in 1990, or previously, it went back to the 70s when he started giving. Those stories are real, and if you're not asking people for those intentional plan gifts, you're leaving money on the table. Not that you might ever realize, but someone in that organization is going to reap the fruits of that labor. Okay? Therefore, add a tagline to your website, your solicitations, and your thank you acknowledgments. Invite the board to demonstrate that they understand the importance of transformational gifts. And it doesn't have to be painful. I'm not going to be here when you get that $89,000. You're not taking it away from me. I'm giving it to you when I die. It's a percentage of my estate, or it's a whole dollar. But when you talk about percentage of estates, that's very painless. You can still give to your loved ones, and 5% goes to. Or 3% goes to. Okay? Promote a story about a plan giving donor in the newsletter. We did that. We found a picture. We got a hold of the family. Picture of Sir at Grain Elevator job. Story in newsletter. Simple. Celebrating that person's heart. Planting the seed for some other grain elevator operator or banker or lawyer or Indian chief to do something of similar idea. Here's some resources. You're going to get lots of resources today, but here's some about plan giving. All right, number 10, know thy numbers. Okay. I've been in this business over 35 years, and when I am interviewing people for fundraising positions and they don't know their numbers, the interview doesn't go very long. Okay. Know thy numbers. What's your average gift size overall? What's your 1 to 2 year renewal rate? What's your 5 year renewal rate? What's your 10 year repeat donor renewal rate? How many donors have you retained in which segments? AFP is the Association of Fundraising Professionals. Report that retention is down 45, to 45%, which is down 15% from the prior year. Holy moly. What are we doing with our current donors? What is influencing donors? Now, in my margin on the next slide, I have a sad, unsmiley face. What's your number of lapsed donors? They will not give to you for their whole life. Do not be offended by that. It is called a fact of life. They have multiple interests. AFP reports that in 2018, the gifts between $250 and $999, which is where I would say the bulk of our gifts are below that. You know, most of our gifts are under $1,000. That's the big end of the pyramid, okay? Well, between $250 and $999, they dropped by 4%. They couldn't deduct it on their taxes. How brilliant was that idea? And gifts under $250 dropped by 4.4%. So gifts under $1,000 dropped by over 8%. I have a bunch of articles, and if you want one, you can just take it. I made copies, not for everyone, and one of them is, Where Are My Donors? If you don't know this data, you can't set strategy for your shop. So when I say know your numbers, it's important. How many of your donors have upgraded? And not everyone was influenced by this new tax law. Okay, but I'm saying there were a lot of people that were. A whole lot of people. How many new donors did you get? What was their average gift? Therefore, there is this great tool that was put together by four organizations. It's called Measuring Fundraising Effectiveness. Have any of you heard this project? It was the cost of fundraising isn't enough. It was put together by AFP, Wise Giving Council through the BBB, Board Source, and GuideStar. It is a tool. It is online. You can get it for free. It will walk you through how do you do a fundraising effectiveness analysis of your results. I do this with clients. I love to see the ahas. So, and you want to measure these things. You want your board to understand these things. You want your key staff to understand this information. What's your total fundraising net? That's not about beating up that some things are expensive in fundraising. That's just, it's like any other business. You have acquisition, you have maintenance costs, you have cultivation costs. Those are real costs. You're not going to be able to do it for free. What's your dependency quotient? Does anybody know what a dependency quotient is? All right. Lord Gottrocks gives you $1 million. Your average gift from all other donors is $38. Lord Gottrocks is your dependency quotient. If Lord Gottrocks goes away, you are SOL. But you can also look at dependency quotients from, we have X amount of our percentage of funding coming from grants. We have X percentage coming from events, X percentage coming from donors, in which different mechanisms. What are your dependency quotients? You're never going to be perfectly balanced. And there's not a perfect. I love that question. So let me just tell you, there's not a perfect. Just know what your risks are and work your margins. Does that make sense? So when, I love it when board members said, if only we had that really, really rich donor. And I'd say, then I would lose sleep at night. Because that really, really rich donor isn't going to just stay with me forever necessarily. Because their family's going to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's and then they're going to go there. And that's where they should go. You know, we are being good stewards for a period of time. So this resource I talk about, please check it out. All right. Those trends, how do you feel about them? Did you know all that? Some new knowledge, hopefully. But also, you want to be asking those same questions of your shop. What are my trends? What are my trends over 3 to 5 years? not just from one year to the next. How can you set strategy if you don't know your data? If you're just doing the same thing every year. If Thanksgiving dinner is the same every year, that might be a good thing. If your fundraising strategies are the same thing every year, that is not a good thing. Okay? So it's the only time you get to be in the driver's seat is when you're doing your strategy. It's fun. Don't be afraid of it. Start thinking that way. So how do you guys feel about those trends?
Okay.
They're normal? Okay. Okay.
Sounds like we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I like to talk about numbers and strategies and trends because it professionalizes our business. Okay? It says, I'm supposed to be developing strategy. I'm supposed to know what the trends are.
Would we have different trends and strategies?
Sure you would.
Because most of our donors and our donations are from churches or church members in our fellowship.
Right.
So
that's why I'm giving you national, this is Blackbaud stuff. Mm-hmm. Blackbaud is a reliable source of information. You can drill down and get just faith-based. But even within faith-based, that's changing dramatically. So you've got to know your numbers. I'm just giving you a framework and template for thinking. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But please learn your numbers. Yes.
I think for some of us that are in the faith-based segment, especially if our contributions are related to a specific faith family, our dependency quotient.
Absolutely.
That faith family is potentially problematic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you do so much. I mean, I don't know all of you, but I have come to learn Steve's organization a little bit. And you do impactful work for the whole community. It is not just your faith that is deserving of support. Okay, culture of philanthropy. Is this a term that folks know about or use, think about? Okay, so we'll start with the definition, then we'll go to a graphic. I like graphics because I'm a visual person. But we all need words so we understand, okay? Culture of philanthropy. What is culture of philanthropy? Philanthropic culture is a subset of you can read this, but I'll read it to you, is of organizational culture. A culture of philanthropy refers to the organization's attitude toward philanthropy and fund development, and it is a mission component. How many of you think of philanthropy as a mission component? It is part of your mission to engage the community in the solution you're trying to achieve. Now, how does your world, how does your organization feel about fundraising? Everything from throwing up to jumping up and down and hallelujah. But truly, if you were to say, how do my peeps really feel about fundraising? What would they say?
They're excited about it.
Okay.
Generally.
In the whole organization. Cool beans. Who else? Okay. Yes?
Most of my people, they want to sell the good story of what we do, but they don't want anything to do with the money aspect of it.
Amen.
That scares them to death. Mm-hmm. And giving them that idea of, I mean, my house parents have the most powerful story to tell. They don't want anything to do with money and getting that crossover. You know.
Well, and helping them connect the dots. And we're going to get to that. Yes?
We say that everybody in the organization is a
Uh-huh. And that's kind of been
the mantra.
To create. That doesn't mean that everybody necessarily has to ask for money, but they can do something. They can connect me with people they know or whatever. So that's one of the things we've worked on hard the last couple of years. Everybody, maintenance people, accountants, everybody is a fundraiser.
Good. So research shows that an organization's culture dramatically affects its effectiveness. And there's that whole theory about if you don't create a culture, one will be created around you. So the culture is pervasive. It's affecting all levels of the organization and including fund development. You will also see organizations that have a healthy culture around philanthropy connect the dots very well to their donors. So when we look at the next slide, this is just a visual. Where are you challenged? We know that culture begins with the leader. That means the CEO, the executive director, whatever title somebody has. You lead from the top. That there's a board and staff partnership. The board cannot just wipe its hands and say that's the staff job. The staff can't say if only the board would do more. So it's a partnership. It's integrated into operations. And the next slide will show you more about that, but let's just hang in where we are right now. It's customer service and donor-centric. When I use that statement, don't make me work hard to find your 990. If you post your 990, you're creating a culture of philanthropy. It's saying, I respect donors. I want to make it easy for them. I am transparent with our information. We are proud of our results. Do you see where I'm connecting dots now? So when you're talking with your organization about this, you can say, oh, light bulb. So your primary activities, 100% giving from at the board level. That you all build relationships, you said it well. That house parent might have a great story, and we may use that house parent to tell the story, but you're going to do the ask. But they help build the relationships. Okay? You cultivate prospects. You don't attack them. You cultivate them. I just planted hostas in my yard last Saturday. It snowed on Sunday. Someone said, are you going to cover them all? I said, no, I'm going to pray. Okay? And I put mulch around the bottom of them, so I was cultivating them. Okay? We cultivate prospects. We solicit and we thank. And as staff, we support board activities so they can be part of the process. We don't expect them to know how to do it. We expect them to be allergic to it. Yes. And we ease them into roles and they grow. Why? Because, because they have relationships that we don't have. Okay, all right, okay, all right.
Do you have advice on how to get a board to do that?
I think it's often done one-on-one. Group training has its role of planting seeds, and then it's one-on-one. So you start talking about Where are your relationships that matter, that you think would be touched by the fact that we saved Susie's life?
We tried to have a board meeting where we were going to try to see if they could get more involved with the fundraising part of it. And what we came up with was a list of stuff for all of us.
Correct. And so your board chair needs to stop that.
Yeah.
And that's the second half after the break of what's the golden triangle.
Okay. So I need to know how to.
I get it. So this next slide is just an illustration. And it says, we all do these things. The culture of philanthropy. So admin, and I'm just using titles, you might not have these exact titles, but they answer the phone. How do they answer the phone? I'm serious. How do they answer the phone? Are they bothered that you called? How do they answer the phone? That is like so important, you just don't even know. Customer service. Is that your data have integrity? Now, I admitted that we went through numerous data conversions and we lost some data and we messed it up and we went on and we still thrived. But we worked hard at data integrity. Do you work hard at data integrity? Are your thank you notes genuine or are they boring? Did you say Susie's life? Or were you more worried about the fact, well, no, that, now you have to take that line off because they can't deduct it from their taxes. Okay, all right. But you still have to give them thank you notes, whether or not there's a level of which we were required by law. Give everybody a thank you note. It's just good practice. Mm-hmm. All right, your mom told you to say thank you. Do it. The board, this is the kind of roles they have. Donor meetings, even the most scared board member who is afraid to ask for a gift can go along. So I'm going to just use you as an example. I'm the executive director, you're the board member, and we're going to call on this man named Norman?
Hank.
Hank, sorry. And you are scared to death to make an ask. I'm not going to let you make an ask because you're scared to death. I'm going to say, Steve, tell Hank about how we saved Susie's life. Hank, the conversation happens. You say, now be, play with me here. How can I help?
I'm oppressed.
Okay. Because I know he can't make an ask, but he can watch, he can look, he can listen, and the next time he's going to say, Hank, we need your help. So he went from being afraid to seeing that Hank had a heart, and he wants to give. Now, it might not be the next time. It might be the fifth time, but don't give up on them. Help them have success. A board member coming along and being so genuine, not flowery language, no jargon, just, this is what we did to save Susie's life. I'm so proud of our agency. We could do more. That's genuine. It's not 9,000 numbers and our 990, and yeah, we can give them all that. It's we saved Susie's life. Okay? They make introductions. This board member might not have even known Hank, but I knew he had a good story to tell. All right? They give and get. You know what that concept means. I write my check, and I get others too. Whether that's a foundation, whether that's an organization, whether that's an individual, whether that's a corporation. I use my sphere of influence to get. I'm a door opener. That is a board member responsibility, not just oversight. The board also can write thank you notes. You fell in love with Hank. You're going to take out a piece of paper when you get back to your office and you're just going to jot him a note. That does not relieve the agency from writing their thank you. But it's genuine. It's like, thanks so much for lunch. Thanks for taking the time. You just inspired me. Okay? Be genuine. Be authentic. Leadership. What do? You make donor calls. You do prospecting. You also write love notes. I'm a fan of love notes. I know it's old school. I still love love notes. I love getting love notes. Don't you love it when you get a note in the mail? It's touching. Now, what does development do? They lead the follow-up. They ask and close one-on-one gifts. They do the relationships. They plan and execute. They tee things up so the executive director doesn't do all their own homework. Yes, it's called managing up. The program staff, lots of program staff here this week, they ID prospects. It is not immoral or illegal for program staff to ID prospects. They know whose lives have been touched. They can go on donor calls. Oh my gosh, program staff are the best. You really want to hear about saving Susie's life? But tell them they have 5 minutes, okay? We don't want War and Peace. We want the abbreviated version. We want impact. Program staff can go on donor calls. They love bragging about the agency. Give them that chance. They can come up with story ideas. They are inputters to grant content, and they're the trackers of outcomes for donors. I mean, for grants. Marketing, lead generation, PR, social media, website, communications, and social media. IT, donor system. Does it work? Data integrity. Reporting and analysis. They generate reports. This is the culture of philanthropy. We all touch it. Does this make sense? We all play our part. Now, some of you might only have 3 of these people on your team because you don't have a big shop. Okay? All right. Does this make sense? Do we outline this for our team? So where are our challenges? Anybody ready to share skin knees?
The challenge is I'm the team.
I get it. But do you have IT in your organization? Do you have somebody that answers the phone?
Yeah.
So you're not the whole team. Do you have a board? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have program staff? Mm-hmm. Okay. You're not the whole team. You thought you were the whole team. You're acting like the whole team. Mm-hmm. You're not creating a culture of philanthropy. Does that make sense? All right. I'm beyond where we're supposed to have a break. And no teacher gets good marks if they don't let you go to the bathroom. So, we're having a break.